Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, Teron Davenport reported that Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat were not on the practice field, but all of the Tennessee Titans, per Brian Callahan, were in the building for Titans minicamps. We'll send it straight to Brian Callahan.
That's kind of how, it, at this point, what it is. He'll be ready and available for the start of training camp for sure. Should be out here maybe next week. We'll see, but it's still considered a short term.
Also a short term thing with Jeff?
Yeah, correct.
The pressure part, how tough is it to distinguish maybe when you credit a guy with a sack, and how is that determination made, and is that sometimes met with the conflict?
Yeah. There's never sacks, if you're asking me. There's definitely a balance. I mean, we want those guys to be mindful of the quarterback and not enter that area. We know when guys are free and if it's a sack, and we know when guys have won a rep. I'm pretty fair about that. Now, in the moment, I might not be, just because I like seeing them get all riled up. But we're all on the same page on what a sack's going to look like when the pressure's coming. It's we all know. We're just trying to make sure that guys stay off the quarterback and stay out of the pocket so that we don't hit hands on helmets and all that stuff. So that part is usually pretty fun, though, because they're all looking for – everything's a sack to the defense. And that's not always the case. So,
I know it's like you said, it's short term, and there's nothing you can really do about injuries. But how difficult is that for a rookie in the first off season to be kind of missing time a little bit?
Yeah, it's never ideal. You know, it's not. You never want to miss any time if you can help it. There's an adjustment period that guys go through that you want them to be as out and present for as much as possible. But again, there's not much you can do about it. And as long as guys are still on top of the mental side, the physical work kind of comes along with it. There's plenty of time for that still. But yeah, certainly not what you want. You don't want to miss time if you can help it.
How much of a believer are you in the year two jump, especially for a quarterback? And is it altered any by the fact that you're putting in a new system?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of improvement that happens when players go from their first to second year. And maybe it might not be necessarily a statistical jump either. They just become so much more comfortable playing the game. There's so much more around them that they're aware of. There's so much more. They're more comfortable in their system, the techniques that are asked, and then what it feels like to play. There's always a big jump, I think, from year one to year two, just like there is sometimes in the season where, you know, that first or second week to that third or fourth week looks a lot different sometimes. So I believe in it. I think there's something to that just because of the experience that they gain from year one to year two. And the system probably, you know, may limit it just a bit because you're not jumping from year one to year two with the same techniques and coaching. So there might be a little give and take there. But, yeah, I think there's a huge improvement usually from the first year to the second year.
Has it been tougher than you expected to get a read on what you have defensively with so many of the guys missing or injured or out?
Not really. I think I got a pretty good feel for what we are on defense. The guys that are here in practicing, we got a great feel for. Some of the guys that are still returning to play, I kind of know what those guys are about too. So what it looks like together, I'm anxious to see it. But I don't – I got a pretty good feel for what I think we're capable of on defense.
Bill mentioned the things he liked about Sadiq on film. Mm-hmm. How much have you seen those things translate into what you can see out of an offensive lineman?
Yeah, no, you see Sadiq's strength and power. Those things do show up. His athleticism. And he's learning a lot of new techniques as well, so that's been fun to see him grow. You see him starting to take the next step kind of as the days have gone by here, so been good to see from him. So there's a lot to like about Sadiq, and he's got some experience playing as well, so you hope that he's another guy that can really ascend as he learns more and more.
We've heard rave reviews about Traylon from you, mm-hmm. and guys in the receiver room, guys in the corner room, but yep. We also see him working today as a gunner. If he winds up fourth in line at the position, no matter how good he is he going to have to contribute on special teams, and what can he do there?
Absolutely, he's going to have to contribute. You know, you only get so many hats on game day, and If he's one of those guys on game day, we're going to have to find a place for him, because those special teams, guys like him should be great special teams players on top of it, just because of his size and speed. And so the gunner thing is something I think he's very capable of doing. There might be some more roles for him in the other phases as well. But, yeah, anytime you're not the full-time starter, you're going to have to contribute somewhere on game day. And I think Trey's attitude and approach to special teams has been fantastic. And so I'm excited to see what he could do for him. I think he's an asset on special teams.
Guy that is getting a long look there?
Yeah, you have to. Same reason. If you're not one of the top two or three guys, you're going to have to contribute on teams. And, he's a guy in that mold that if you're trying to get a hat on game day and be one of the 46 active, you got to play a role on special teams, especially as a skill player.
Along those special teams lines with the new kick return rule and all of that, how do you go about, like, does it change who you put back there as far as, like, the skill set and at what point are you guys as far as in strategizing how you're going to approach it?
Yeah, Colt's doing a really good job of researching and playing with different lineups and combinations of what that might look like. We don't know yet. That's the hard part is there's a lot of unknowns, and I think there'll be a little bit of chaos in the preseason with it, just in terms of everybody trying different things. There's a lot of different lineups and personnels that you can mess around with and see what might work. And again, we won't really know until we see it live in an NFL game. But there's some opportunities for some different guys to do things in that particular phase of the special teams.
I've heard some people refer to that as like an additional offensive play. Mm-hmm. So that being said, does that change? Like you mentioned, guys who are non-starters, mandatory playing special teams. But does that change where you have the potential to put a starter back there?
Absolutely. I think you'll see a lot of guys. I think you'll see some running backs back there on a league. You'll see some designated returners. You'll see a different style of returner than maybe the traditional kickoff returner. You might see guys that are better with the ball in their hands that maybe aren't returners in the sense that they're the punt returner or the kickoff returner. There's a little bit more flexibility for the play because it's going to be so unique and shorter distance and shorter coverage, and the ball is going to get in their hands quicker. So there's definitely places for guys that maybe not in the past would be your traditional kick returner, that they're a starting running back or receiver, or they have some skill with the ball in their hand, then they have a chance to maybe make an impact there.
Is that a spot? You mentioned Triton could do other things. That potential spot, look at him as a returner?
Sure. Yeah, there's absolutely. He's big and strong and fast, and there's a chance that if we can get more reps of it and see him do it, there's certainly an opportunity there for him.
Say everybody looks good in shorts. And yeah. How do you determine right now if somebody's doing well or not?
I look at it more for the process oriented, as far as do they know what to do? Are they really good in the meeting? Can they take the whatever's being taught technically from the meeting room to the field? And then when they get chances to show that they can make a play or two, it's easier in the passing game, obviously, than it would be up front in the trenches. But you want to see guys transferring skills for what they're being taught from the drill work into the teamwork. It is hard to know the physicality part of it and what that's going to look like, but you kind of have a feel for the guys that are doing things the way you want it done, and they're making progress towards fixing a technique or doing a better technique. That's more what I look at. The physicality part, I think, is for another day and time, but right now is more about the process of in the building, in the meeting room, how they handle all the learning and how they handle the techniques and fundamentals that are being taught, and can they apply it in a team period, even if it is a tempo down team period. Are they where they're supposed to be with their hands, the eyes, all those things? That's sort of how we evaluate those guys right now.
What do you say with James Williams as he's developing as a rookie?
Yeah, he's got a ways to go, like all the rookies do. There's a lot of learning in place. He's obviously switching positions too, from a safety in college into a linebacker spot, and we think he's got a chance to make that transition and be a pretty good linebacker. The way those linebackers are in the NFL now, they're all lighter and faster. A lot of them are converted, kind of big safeties that convert into linebacker spots. So it's a unique developmental angle to take on a guy like him. And I think he's got the traits to make that switch and potentially be an impact player for us as a linebacker down the road. And again, he's going to have to make it on special teams too. That'll be an important part for him as well.
You mentioned last week, I think, that tweaking Will's base just a little bit. How's he taken to that? And what are you kind of seeing?
That's been great. I think one of the things I enjoy about Will is he's incredibly coachable. He's got a great perspective, and he's got great awareness of his body mechanics. You know, some guys, it's a natural thing. They just feel what you're coaching, and he's done a great job. I think he sees the benefit in his mechanical improvement and his accuracy. Been really pleased with how much he's taken and translated into actually doing it, which has been fun to watch.
Solidify the foundation you put into place in this three-day window this week, and is there any benefit to being forced to go inside today or having the pressure? Just kind of those extra things that add a little adversity or pressure to what these 3 days are.
I mean, that's what the NFL season is. You know, you have to adapt. You have to be flexible. You're going to have stretches of good play. You're going to have stretches of bad play. You're going to have things go wrong that you didn't anticipate. So any time that you can keep your team ready to pivot without having to do much poking and prodding, they just sort of go with the flow and answer the bell, whatever you're asking of them, that's been fun to see. We have a pretty resilient team, I think. We'll find out a whole lot more as we get closer to the season. But anytime you can do things that are hard in practice or hard in your daily process, it certainly makes the transition when it happens for real a whole lot easier and much more prepared to bounce back from whatever it is that you're facing that day, that drive, that game.
A couple weeks ago, you mentioned how just how excited you are to use Tajay and mm-hmm. and Tony and just the versatility you have with them. Considering the kind of weapons you guys have on the outside, the attention that they're going to get, how do you, just in terms of creativity, like what you guys can potentially do to them because of that attention going to the receivers?
Yeah, there's you end up getting a lot of one-on-ones, which is, you know, ultimately what the NFL in most passing situations is can you win the one-on-one matchup? And it doesn't necessarily have to mean a wide receiver on a corner. Those one-on-ones can be tight ends on safeties or tight ends on linebackers or backs on linebackers. Those are the matchups that you try to exploit. You try to find whatever matchup you can find that is to your advantage. And a lot of times when you have backs like those two guys, they're going to be the matchup advantage against linebackers most of the time. And so you try to find every which way you can to put them in that space so they can go beat what is likely a lesser athlete. And they both have the ability to do it. And so as we get closer to game planning and less installing of a system, now we have a chance to be a little more free and creative with how we deploy them in the formation and use them against players that we think they can go beat.
Seen from Gibby and how he's kind of taking command, especially in calling out what Denard wanted to see today.
Really pleased with where Gibbs at. He's got a little bit of experience behind him now. He's incredibly smart, and I think the way you ask the question is the best way that you see command from him, which is what you need from that spot. And he knows what to do. He knows how to get guys lined up. He's got a little bit of experience now, and so a player like him has a lot of value, and he's been a pleasant surprise as he's taken a leadership role in that room and been able to take over a little bit more of the communication part as well, obviously because Kenneth is not in every rep right now because of the return to play process. So it's a chance for him to really take hold of it, and he has. He's done a really nice job.
How does that command offset some of the maybe athleticism that he's not at the top of the scales on?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways that you don't have to necessarily be a high-end athlete to be a good linebacker. You know, I think there's a lot more that goes into playing linebacker. There's the instincts. There's the speed at which they can read and diagnose and trigger and make plays on the ball. It's knowing where to match in the passing game. It's knowing understanding concepts. So there's a lot of ways that guys that may not be the high-end, high-weight speed guys that can make a long living in the NFL doing things the right way. And I think that that's one of the things I think stands out about Gibb is his ability to know what to do and when to do it. Is what's going to separate him.
How much is the Jukwu kind of taking advantage of the right tackle reps he's getting? I know pads are not on, but yeah. With NPF and Duncan's availability limited, how much is he kind of banking reps and taking advantage of it?
He's doing everything that you would want a player in that situation to do. He takes it very serious. He's outstanding in the meeting room. He's taken the scheme and he's learned it. I've been really surprised that, you know, he's a guy that I didn't know much about. And as he's gotten more opportunities, he started to show up. And that's when you're a guy in that position, that's all you can ask for. And so he keeps stacking good days together. And so, again, we'll see when we get to training camp what that looks like. But he's done everything you could possibly do with an opportunity that he's been given. And that's always good to see.
What did you know about Harold before you got here? And then what did you see from him in the building?
I've had to play against Harold a few times, and so I'm well aware of what he can bring to the table. He's a really, really good football player. I love his energy. I love the way he bounces around. I had to slow him down in our walkthrough period there for a minute. He was flying. But I just have a ton of respect for what he's done. He's incredibly smart. He really studies football, and he's got the physical tools and talent to match it. And so I think it's a pretty formidable pairing with Arden and Harold on the edges. Those guys have played some pretty good football for a while now. So it's good to have him back in the building and have him around some too, which has been great.
Dad was an award winner today.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Nice to see him get recognized for what he's done over the years.
That was pretty cool. To be recognized for a Lifetime Achievement Award, I think, in any field is a pretty tremendous honor. It's one that I don't think he takes lightly, but it's cool for me to be able to tell that to him. He's certainly deserving of it. I mean, what he's done over his career and the players he's helped along the way, one, become really good players, and two, make a lot of money, and that's ultimately what you want to do as a coach, is put those guys in position to have success. And really cool moment for him to be able to offensive line coaches don't get honored very often like that. And so it's very deserving and proud of him. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool for him.
You tell him that in like a private setting, or is that?
No, I told him when we broke the team down.
Okay.
He was talking about whatever happened the last play before we brought it up. And so he didn't even hear me. I told the team that he wins this award, and I look over and he's talking to Scott, and he kind of looks at me like, what did I miss? I was like, come on over here. We need you. So he said a couple brief words and just was thankful for the honor. But yeah, he's kind of in full coach mode and didn't really understand what I was telling him in the moment. So everyone's cheering for him, and he's looking at me like, what is going on? So
can you help us understand the limitations on the number of people we're allowed to talk to after these practices?
Just kind of how it's always been for me. It's just open locker rooms in the spring, put guys in a tough spot. And one of the things I believe in, and this isn't a you thing, it's a me thing. It's as we started to build our culture here, I didn't want guys to have to speak on something that they hadn't experienced yet. And so I wanted to make sure that we got to know the players, they got to know us. And so when they were asked questions about how things go, what we're doing, scheme and all that stuff, they had things to answer. And so it's more of a me thing. Wanted to make sure that those guys were prepared to be in front of you guys and be able to speak on the things that you want them to speak about. So that's generally the off-season thought process for me.
Thanks,
you got it.
Thank you.
See you guys.
All right, there you go. That was Titans head coach Brian Callahan here. We'll hear from Will Levis here in just a moment. We'll also talk with Seth Walder of ESPN Analytics in just about 15 minutes or so. But before we get to Seth Walder, some takeaways from Brian Callahan. Anything that stood out to you?
I don't think there's anything that stood out other than, explaining why, because I didn't know, but explaining why certain guys were able to speak in front of the media and certain guys weren't, or, why they only had, you were not allowed to talk to guys in the locker room and whatnot. So he gave clarification, and I'm sure that's something that, people like Paul and whoever else is in that room, Teresa, whoever else, you just want to know the why, certain things happen or is happening. And he explained it. So you got the explanation. Now you can kind of move on. But I don't think there's anything within what he said that was sort of riveting or, that this brought to light, something about this team. I think he talked in generality a lot. He talked about his team as a whole. I didn't know that about his dad, that Bill got that award. So congratulations to him. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think it's the same. I think what you heard today is what you're going to hear across the board at in other locker rooms,
He's engaging. He answers the questions, acts like he's happy to be there to answer the questions. Hopefully he can stay consistent with that. I think that's a good thing. I think I hear an emphasis on the special teams and that the new kickoff, just like a lot of people believe, is going to be different. It's going to be an unknown but a factor. It's not just going to be just boot it.
Boot
nine
it in.
Times out of ten, it's a touchback, or seemingly nine times out of ten, or you get a pinback. It's a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. And he said that there are some guys that if you want to play – and you're not going to be the starter, you better play on special teams, including Mr. Burks.
That was my biggest takeaway, was Brian Callahan basically saying, like, if Treylon Burks wants a roster spot, he's going to have to contribute on special teams to ensure that he has one. I think that's pretty big and pretty bold. Because, and of course, special teams are going to look different with the different kickoff and what the new special team strategy is with kickoffs. Frankly, I'm not going to know until I see it, whatever their strategy is going to be specifically. But I mean, he's basically telling us, like, look, we're not expecting really Treylon Burks to be any sort of world beater, at least at the wide receiver position. Anything he's going to get, he's said that before, he's got to earn it. But now stating here a little bit and a little bit more clarity, like, look, if he said Treylon Burks and Caleb Farley are going to have to contribute on special teams in order to be guaranteed a roster spot. I don't think the Caleb Farley company is anywhere where Treylon Burks wants to be.
I think it doesn't surprise me. Because this is the way you do business. If you're not the top two,
and the only reason, right?
Yeah, and only reason he didn't, you know, because typically is if you're not the top two guys, then yeah, you're gonna have to play special teams. That's just the way it is. I mean, because they gotta justify putting you on the active roster if you're not a part of the top two. But then he had to quickly, like as he's thinking about it, because he's thinking about Tyler Boyd now. He's if you're not two or three, because Tyler Boyd ain't playing much special teams.
Well, we talked about it a lot before. You said this, right? But as we were discussing, is it a good move to take Boyd or not? You mentioned that.
Exactly. He's going to.
The special teams part of it.
So he's going to have to play some form of special teams. He may not be the starter, but he's going to be a backup on special teams, meaning Tyler Boyd, because you can't just be the third wide receiver. You got to be the third wide receiver and play special teams. That's just how it is. Now, he might not play as much and might not be the frontline guy. Why? Because he's an older player. They're going to find other guys. But if one of those guys got to go down, he has to be able to jump into that space because they only got so many, you know, helmets on game day. But what he said about Treylon Burks did not surprise me one bit. I've said that a long time ago. Like, listen, if you're not in the top two, Treylon's going to have to figure out how to play special teams somehow, some way. He may just end up being the gunner, and that's it. But it justifies us putting a helmet on your head on game day that you also – but do they want him to show that he can be a guy on offense. The special teams is just a justification for us to put a helmet on your head on Sunday or Monday or Thursday, whenever you play. That's just the justification. But what we do hope is that you're able to sort of grow and mature and start producing on the field. So then we can slowly take away that responsibility of special teams. I've been through it. I understand it. Nobody can tell me different. That's why Treylon Burks is on special teams. I've said this a long time ago. So that was one of the things that didn't surprise me, because you're the fourth wideout, man. You better play some special teams, or they can't justify putting a helmet on your head on game day.
Also disappointing to not see Tavondre Sweat out there. And Brian Callahan said, you know, yeah, obviously you'd like him to be out there, but nothing you can do about it. I'm sure there's a certain sense of frustration. But I feel it, too. I'm not the coach, and I feel frustrated that Tavondre Sweat can't get out there.
I'm not frustrated. I'm not frustrated.
But you don't want this to be the story.
You don't want this.
It
to,
is.
Yeah,
it's
you don't
becoming
want this
the story.
Continue to be. But I'm sure there is, because when you drafted him, you knew exactly what was being presented to you. You knew all the few red flags with his weight and everything else. So you knew that when you drafted him. You draft him, then you set a plan. And in setting that plan, he may have to miss some days of practice. And better to miss it now than camp. They're trying to get him ready. I don't know what the injury is, you know, and they won't tell us. But what they're hoping is they're trying to get him ready from a conditioning standpoint for July, late July. Yeah, you can miss a few days here, but missing it doesn't mean you're still not conditioning within the building. We don't see that. And I guarantee you, if he's able to run, if not like a true hamstring issue or something like that, when everybody leaves the field, when the reporters, they're all, you know, Teresa, everybody leaves the building, guess who's going to be outside? Tavondre Sweat.
I don't know. But what I'm saying is, would it
be wise to, I know you don't have to tell us anything, but would it be wise, would it be good for him? Mm-hmm. If they articulated a little more of exactly what we're dealing with here?
It could be. I'm not saying that, you know, that
I'm sure
what they're doing is the right or wrong way.
They've decided to keep it hush-hush, but it's just fuels speculation of, oh, he must be out of shape.
But I would assume that he's not in the best shape. He's not NFL ready. And that's okay. Because I guarantee you, out of those guys they brought in, none of them are really in NFL shape ready. If you ask them to play an NFL game, NFL season right now, they'll try, but more than likely, half of them will pull up with hamstring issues. He may not be in condition right now. And that's okay, as long as it doesn't linger over into July when we start camp. We're building you up now. So hopefully when training camp starts, that's when I start to get sort of concerned if it leads into training camp. Right now, we're good, but I know because he was a second-round pick and everything that sort of came with it, the weight issues before he even got here, I understand that being the case. But unless this continues in training camp, July, whenever they start, then that's when I'm going to start to get concerned because I've seen this before. And I can't get too, concerned because they're not telling us anything. Until they tell us something, it's like, okay, obviously what y'all doing, y'all feel is best for Tavondre Sweat. Unless y'all come out and tell us it's this or it's that, then I'm okay.
And they're not going to do that.
Exactly. And then I'm like, okay, do what you need to do. But if this start reoccurring in camp, where he's hurt and this and that, then now we got a problem.
We got to take a break before we catch up with Seth Walder of ESPN Analytics. So Seth Walder put out the Football Power Index, and all of the analytics that they broke down of the FPI and Super Bowl likelihood and likelihood of the first overall pick, none predicted a very great season for the Tennessee Titans. So we'll get a little bit more context as to what those numbers really mean from Seth Walder coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays for broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Caroline Willie D. Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. So we started off our show yesterday looking at Seth Walder's FPI, the Football Power Index, at least right now where we stand on June 4th in the NFL postseason. So we were kind of discussing where the Titans fall, how the numbers aren't very favorable for the Tennessee Titans. So who better to help us break down exactly what those numbers mean than Seth Walder himself. Seth Walder, ESPN, joins us now. Appreciate your time today, Seth, and really appreciate you for joining us. In reading your article, you mentioned how, quarterback and backup quarterback are a factor in FPI. The ESPN bet over-under win totals, how special teams are a factor. But just to kind of give us a little bit of context, exactly what is the FPI, what goes into it, and what you have seen, how accurate of a projection model is it really?
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. So the FPI in the preseason is very market-based. So we're looking at the win totals, like you mentioned, and factoring in the schedule as well, right? Like if you take two teams that are 8.5 win teams, they're not necessarily equivalently talented because we got to factor in, well, who they're going to play because the betting market knows that as well. So we do that. And we've got a few other factors, like you mentioned, quarterback, backup quarterback, that are go into it. And basically what we're trying to do is determine what's our best estimate as to how good each team is, rate them, rank them from 1 to 32, and then simulate the season using that. How accurate it is? I would say it's a pretty accurate model, but relative to models or relative to just predictions in general. Like, we're under no illusions here. This list is going to look wildly different come, November 1st or something like that, because we learned so much. There's a lot of uncertainty baked in, but that doesn't mean that should stop us from making predictions at this point, because we can say, I feel pretty confident the Chiefs are better than, like, the Giants at this point, right? So why would we not try, even though we know some things will get mixed up for sure.
I'm sure the Jets FPI this time last year was much more favorable than what it was after week one, after Aaron Rodgers got injured. Looking at where the Titans stand at 27th in the FPI, how much does that have to say about Will Levis, in your opinion?
I think it has a lot to do with Will Levis. So obviously the young player, and I think that you build in the uncertainty and the fact that there could be significant growth. We've certainly seen that from players. He hasn't played a full season, just 9 starts under his belt. But he had a 33 QBR. That would have been basically in the Bryce Young zone, right? He only had 9 games, like I mentioned. But that's just not where you got to be if you want to expect strong performance. It doesn't mean that he can't turn around quickly. I mean, Jared Goff, you know, just signed a huge deal this offseason. And I remember after his rookie season, he also played a partial season, and it was miserable. I mean, awful that year. And so you can certainly turn it around after your rookie season. But I do think that Levis is a big part of the reason why the Titans are holding back, because they've obviously added players in other spots this year that I think help the roster overall. But you can only do so much depending on what you get from the quarterback.
We'll talk with Seth Walter, ESPN, discussing his article that he put out on ESPN, ranking the teams. From a analytical standpoint, so you should check it out. It's a really good read. Now, Seth, looking at this team, and we've discussed, and especially today with the Titans, if you're just talking 22, then I think this team can compete and can win more games than what many predict. But then as you start to get deeper, that's where the problem lies. Do you take that into account when you put together this assessment of the Titans, not just their starting 11 and their quarterbacks, obviously, but the depth of this team?
I would say implicitly, yes, because the betting market is factoring in, you know, everything and everything, anything and everything. Explicitly, no. Like, we're not factoring in anything literally like who your backup linebackers are. I do kind of agree with you in the sense that, like, if you look at this roster and we say, okay, what does this team look like if Will Levis takes a big step and he becomes a league average, like the 16th best quarterback? Well, now you're looking at it, it's like, hey, you got Hopkins and Ridley on both sides. I think the offensive line is good enough. You can look at the corners and say, hey, that could be a good tandem. I like guys like Arden Key, I think, is underrated. So, like, I think you can easily imagine a world where this team is a lot better than people realize, but it's just going to – a lot's going to fall on Levis' shoulders.
Now, when you – going back to your article, let's just say last year. I don't know if you did the article, a similar article to this one last year, but if you did – where would you have ranked the Houston Texans, because, or even the Jacksonville Jaguars, to that fact, because those were two teams that, you know, were still, we didn't know too much about. Their roster looked okay, but we didn't know exactly what the quarterbacks would be. And then obviously fast forward, we know the quarterback is damn good in Houston, you know, so we can justify, or we can look at why their record was that way. But did you do an article about this last year? And if so, where did you have a Houston ranked?
I'm so glad you asked. I almost mentioned this right at the top when we talked about how predicting these things. Houston, in this article last time, we had Houston at number 32, which just goes to show you how little we all know about football. We had Houston 32. By the time the season started, so we have this rating that gets updated over the course of the off season and then every day during the season. By the time the season started, Houston had moved all the way up to 30th. So not that much better. But, yeah, Houston. And who was the other one you wanted to know?
Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. Jacksonville, we had 12th. Yeah, we had 12th Jacksonville. So I don't feel like, you know, I mean, I really collapsed down the end, didn't make the playoffs. I don't even feel like that was like – that feels like that's the right range for them. It just ended up being a shade high.
Seth Walter is with us, ESPN Analytics. We're talking about the assessment that ESPN has made, the power index that has the Titans right now at 27th at this point in the offseason. Seth, something that we've talked to you about in the past that I'm curious to get your take. It's related to where you have them in the overall scheme, but the transition from Derrick Henry to Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard as a tandem. One thing you noted is in the last couple years, Derrick Henry went from being the dominant force to a little bit less efficient, still getting yards, but you started noting some of the things that analytics would point out that are weaknesses. So what do you think the aggregate could be of the tandem they're going to go with this year as opposed to as opposed to what they've been getting from Henry the last couple of years.
Yeah, it is exactly what you said, which is that we've seen this sort of decline from Henry over the last few years, which is to be expected because, honestly, he's lasted longer than I would have guessed if you'd asked me, say, 5 years ago, because that's just the nature of the running back position. I think that they will probably get less out of this group, but not by a lot. But I think the place where it will show up, one of the reasons why I have felt like Henry has been a valuable player for even in this time that he's been declining, is that we can see differences in the way that opponents have reacted when he's on the field. And so I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but like if we look at like for like circumstances, so if we look at the same personnel groupings for the Titans with and without Derrick Henry, we can see that opponents put more defenders in the box when Henry's on the field versus when they're not, when it's not. And so that means just that it makes life easier for the quarterback when you throw into those situations where you've got that stacked box, but you're running play action. That helps Levis, and I think you're just going to lose a little bit of that. I don't think it's going to be a dramatic shift just because he's been declining, but a little bit. I think that will the place it will show up will be actually, strangely enough, in the passing game.
What do you think Pollard has left at this point in his career?
Yeah, to me, there is a chance here because he is a guy that, like you mentioned, the metrics, like the advanced metrics, right? And the one that we often use for running backs is something called rush yards over expectation, which is basically saying at the time of handoff, where are all 22 players on the field? Where are they moving? What's their speed? Which direction are they going? And then it makes an estimate as to how far the running back will make it. And then we see which running backs are able to over or underperform that estimate. So last year, Pollard obviously had a disaster season, and it didn't work out for him, and that's why he wasn't as expensive as you might have guessed a year ago, because 2 years ago, he was very efficient. I'm trying to pull the number up right now. 2 years ago, he generated 226 rush yards over expectation. So that was the third most among all running backs that season, and he was hurt last year, and so I do wonder, there is a world where it was just the injury, you know, he was held back by injury more than maybe we realize, and he gets right back to that efficient play. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it has to do with a little bit needing to split the work a little bit more, but maybe that's a thing he can do with Spears. I think there's a world where that happens. At the same time, I would just say, in general, a golden rule is like once a running back has a bad year, bet against them forever. And it sounds harsh, but like it's the reality of the position.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Okay, so let's go to one other key guy that I think you can shed light on analytically. Everything we've looked at with Calvin Ridley, he's getting pretty good dollars. He's going to have high expectations for the Titans, especially with a young quarterback. His efficiency looks kind of okay in some areas, but one thing that jumped out to us, there was a lot of unsuccessful passes his way, a lot of incompletions. It was with a different team. So what do you see as the profile for Ridley expectation-wise?
I think he's another interesting one. Ridley, we have this metric called open score, which basically quantifies a receiver's ability to get open on every route, whether or not they are targeted. And this is not going to be some magic thing to say he was amazing. He had a 59 open score on a scale of 0 to 99, which was, wide receivers only, which made, you know, put him at 41st among wideouts. It's not great, right? But it's not terrible. But I think there was a rust factor. Smarter X's and O's people than me have indicated that like the Jaguars weren't using him that efficiently. I'm lightly betting on Calvin Ridley this year. I think that he's probably a little underrated at this point because there were, and it is a long time ago, but like there were parts of his career, and I'm thinking specifically about his year in 2020. Like that same metric, he had a 90 open score that year. That's the year he had over 1,300 yards in Atlanta. And so he is getting a little bit up there in age, but we know that skill is in there. So I think it is possible that we see that unlocked again.
What do you see? We're looking at the number. You know, when you see Colts at 20, negative 0.4, Titans 27, negative 2.9, what does that gap look like and equate to in that number in your mind?
So it's pretty easy to think about. So that means basically if the Colts played the Titans on a neutral field, we would favor the Colts by about 2.5 points. There can be some factors that push that a tiny bit one way or another, but by and large, you can think of that as like a betting spread. So Colts Titans neutral field, Colts would be 2.5 point favorites.
Not massive, but something. Mm-hmm. So my question about the Indianapolis Colts, Anthony Richardson, another young quarterback, same draft class as Will Levis, struggled with injury last year. I don't think any of us saw as much of Anthony Richardson as we have liked to have seen. So what do you think was the big difference between the Colts and the Titans, and albeit a 2.5 point difference, so to speak, for lack of a better word, but still a difference nonetheless?
I think that's it, right? Like, even in the small sample that we saw of Richardson, I think we all probably saw a higher level of play than we saw from Levis, and definitely higher upside. So, like, whether Richardson pans out or not, I don't know, but we probably are more bullish on him outside of his health today than we were on draft day. And I think you can see the possibility that he could be their franchise guy. I'm not saying Levis can't, but the probability, I think, that Richardson works out quite a bit higher than it is for Levis. So, yeah, there's arguments for – I think it really does come down to that. Both teams have some nice players, but like outside of quarterback. But to me, that is like a pure – like a very easy difference to make at QB.
Seth Walder, ESPN Analytics. Seth, really appreciate your time. Really enjoyed reading this article and appreciate kind of the analytical breakdown. So we'll love to catch up with you soon.
Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate it. Seth Walder of ESPN Analytics. Let's react to that, what he had to say. Maybe change our mind a little bit. Maybe even more questions that we might have about the FPI. We'll also get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
Yeah, it is exactly what you said, which is that we've seen this sort of decline from Henry over the last few years, which is to be expected because, honestly, he's lasted longer than I would have guessed if you'd asked me, say, 5 years ago, because that's just the nature of the running back position. I think that they will probably get less out of this group, but not by a lot. But I think the place where it will show up, one of the reasons why I have felt like Henry has been a valuable player for even in this time when he's been declining, is that we can see differences in the way that opponents have reacted when he's on the field. And so I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but like if we look at like for like circumstances, so if we look at the same personnel groupings for the Titans with and without Derrick Henry, we can see that opponents put more defenders in the box.
That was Seth Walder, ESPN Analytics. And look, we know whenever Derrick Henry was on the field, you're going to get
a different look.
You're getting a different box. Yeah, you're getting a different look.
And we're in a new world now.
And it was partly because Derrick Henry's Derrick Henry, mm-hmm. and partly because who else you got to defend? It was Derrick Henry, and it was DeAndre Hopkins, and that was it. And so I think it's interesting hearing Seth Walder there. He talked about how, look, if one player's had one bad season, that's enough for me to bend against them. And look, that's the reality of running backs in the NFL at this point. So let's go ahead and apply that to Tony Pollard. Last year in Dallas was not his best season.
His analytics were bad.
Analytics were not great.
An extremely good analytic year 2 years ago. And the Titans obviously are betting on a rebound.
And you could say, okay, well, that was a year without Ezekiel Elliott. So now all of the attention is directed toward Tony Pollard. Can he be your bell cow back? Well, he's not going to have to be your bell cow back. We talked to TD about that yesterday. He said, I think it's really going to be 50-50. You know, getting touches, getting passes out of the backfield, just being pure running backs, it is going to be a little bit more 50. Is that more favorable for Tony Pollard, or is it really kind of the philosophy of Seth Walder of one down season and I'm out?
It seemed like there were some red flag analytics on a lot of things we asked, which is part of the reason why when you look at the overall ranking, it's 27. So I thought that was enlightening to have him sort of articulate how do they arrive at 27. But I think it's a great summer topic going forward is, at this stage, knowing that you get a different look from the defense with not when you don't have Derrick Henry, what will the numbers look like? How efficient can their running game be? We've spent maybe 1/20th of the time talking about the running game mm-hmm. as opposed to the passing game mm-hmm. because of all of the new receivers and everything like that. But I think it's an interesting question. What kind of support can they build with the running game, with the Pollard-Spears mm-hmm. tandem?
Well, they're going to have to, unless they change the philosophy, because we know for so long around here it's been the run sets up the pass. Mm-hmm. And it would reign true, especially with Derrick Henry. But are they going to sort of change that philosophy? They're going to, you know, dump that philosophy on top of his head or, you know, on the top of his head. Yeah. Meaning they will allow the pass to open up the run. Brian Callahan didn't mention, Seth did mention he's interested on how they're going to use these two guys in this new offense. So are they going to continue to do status quo, meaning we're going to run the ball to set up the pass, or are they in a position now where the passing is their strength and running is going to be like a secondary? We're going to run the football, but it's more so we're going to set up the run via our pass. So that's going to be interesting to see which one are they going to employ, because for so long it's been Derrick Henry setting up the pass. Well, now you don't have Derrick Henry. You have right. two different type of backs. So are you going to use the pass with these guys that you brought in to set up the run?
And along those lines, he does not sound like the numbers are favorable for Levis. For mm-hmm. you know, and that can change, but he was not this is a guy that's trending in a big direction. When you ask him about Richardson, he yeah. clearly likes the direction Richardson is going much more than Levis from the number standpoint.
Well, just from the number standpoint, mm-hmm. they're awful. If you didn't, and I don't know how much Titans football Seth Walder has or hasn't watched, but if you're just looking at the numbers, of course you're going to think Will Levis stinks. Yeah. The numbers aren't great.
No, they're not. They're not.
That is going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love, love on your people. Have a wonderful Tuesday in peace.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.